Accession number 11748, Rule 1.
Colonel Mo Khan, Rule 1. Could you tell me, first of all, where you come from and something about your family background, please?
Well, I come from Peshawar, which is the northwest frontier province of India then, and even today it's the northwest frontier province. And this is a town and areas surrounding it, the tribal areas, which came into prominence after the British defeated the Sikhs who were ruling that area. And since the British came up for the first time against the Pathans, they found them entirely different lot from the rest of India whom they had encountered since 1775. The British officers and their operations against the Pathan tribesmen came in for quite a romantic details of fighting against them. So Peshawar was very well known in those days in the military circles during the British rule of India. I come from Peshawar. My father was a policeman, and he was a deputy superintendent of police in Peshawar when he retired in 1933. I was educated in Islamic College at Peshawar, which was founded in 1913 to educate the Pathans.
Did you always intend to go into the army?
Well, I was intending to go to the army throughout. But my elder brother had beaten me with a punch. He went to the army, who was considered the brains of the family. And he made quite a success of it, actually. And he was the first Indian officer who got a military cross on the frontier in 1936. But when my turn came, somehow my family decided to send me to, not to the army. I wasn't a brainy kid, child. So I tried my hand on the, to join the Imperial Police, as it was called. But I miserably failed in maths and geography. So I was miserable, and when the war broke out on the 3rd of September 1939, so then I applied for the army, and I was accepted, and we were sent to Dehradun Indian Military Academy as the first emergency commissioned batch, and I was commissioned on the 21st July 1940. After only about four months and 21 days training.
What was your attitude when you heard that war had broken out? Because the Congress Party took great objection to India being declared a combatant without them being consulted.
It didn't worry people like me. There were a lot of us. There were a lot of us in India who joined the army just as a lark. To join the army, and because all the stories that we read about the First World War and the frontier wars and the efforts of the British army and the romance attached to it, that honestly, I mean, Congress attitude and Muslim League attitude didn't even come into it. So we went and joined the army. For example, apart from the regular cadets who had gone to the Indian Military Academy after Sandhurst was closed after 1932, and they opened a Indian Military Academy in Dehradun in India, that they were going and they were getting commissioned and going to the Indianized battalions of the Indian Army, while we the emergency commissioned officers who joined up and got our commissions, we joined during the war. And I often thought about it as to why people like me joined the army in such great numbers. For example, when they asked for the emergency commissioned commissions, when they announced the emergency commission, 5,000 applicants were there in 1939 November, and out of 5,000 they selected 500 from each province of India. And out of the 500, those of us who went for the interview in Delhi in the month of end of January or beginning of February, 40 were selected 40. And we were considered to be the test case, whether the Indian cadets in a short period of training could be successful. And our batch was more than successful. So much so that 40 of us, out of 40 of us, three were thrown out as unfit. One incidentally didn't want to ride a horse. And he, of the two falls, he refused to mount again. So he was thrown out for lack of guts. Two others were thrown out for being absolutely, you know, lackadaisical about the whole training. So out of about 36, 37 cadets who got our commissions, I think four of us are alive at the end of the war. The rest were all killed. So even that didn't deter us. We joined the army voluntarily with an elan which could compete with any volunteer force in the world.
What was your attitude at that time towards British rule?
Well, to tell the truth, there was not much resentment, except that we all of us wanted to be free one day. And we knew the freedom would come eventually. The way the British were conducting their rule, the politicians made much of it, I mean, much of the slowness of going towards home rule. And we just didn't mind it, really, to tell the truth. I mean, now seeing the world today, in retrospect, the British rule in India was nothing like the French in Algeria, in Morocco, or those places, and the French in China, and the Dutch in Indonesia. The British were unique in their rule of India, as opposed to other colonial powers. In the first instance, to my mind, absolute, as I've been thinking about in the last 50 years of my career, I'm in the army and so on, so over the retirement, that the British colonial rule was not like the other colonial powers, because colonial powers, they colonized the place, like buying a property, settling there for generations, while the British, after the mutiny of 1857, they had a new set of rules of conduct for the British, civil and military officials. For example, they were not allowed to buy property. They were not allowed to settle in India after retirement. Few of them did, and they did it very innocuously, and they stayed on. They did not colonize India. They ruled India, and since 1885, when the ICS, British official, civil official, called the Congress of All India to have a party whose aim was eventual freedom for India, beginning with home rule, etc. So that kind of a thing used to appeal to us, and we used to give a lip service and feel happy about the Congress role and the Muslim League role asking for freedom. But at student level, apart from the fact that they joined, some people used to follow Nehru and Gandhi, some used to follow Muhammad Ali Jinnah. Beyond that, there wasn't. It was not in deep down.
But did you have any personal grievances against British rule?
Not at all. Not at all. Knowing a subject races, we used to read, for example, used to quote at us, the politicians, that half of the human qualities are taken away from his subject race. But we were never treated as slaves by the British. I think in India, in the Indian subcontinent, Pakistan and India combined, I think I've always made the statement that they killed more people in 42 years of their independence than the British killed the local population for political agitation in their nearly 100 years rules of the subcontinent. This I can vouch for it because I made a study of it off and on. So really, I mean, people of my generation, I think they all would know, they all would back me up, that the British, during the British rule, fewer people were killed in political riots than in the last 42 years in India and Pakistan.
What did you think of the quality of the instruction and training that you got at Dehradun?
Perfect. It was based on Sandhurst. It was based on Sandhurst. The instructors are all British officers and British sergeant majors. The British officers were commanding companies of cadets. They were all with distinguished fighting records. I think most of them had had been awarded military crosses and DSOs during the fighting on the frontier and the First World War, and first rate officers whom the cadets, under their training, in their minds, emulated throughout their careers in the army. To this day, I remember the company commanders with their MCs and with their war experiences. There was a question them, and the British were not given to a great deal of, to talk about it, but their reticence also had a quality about it. And it appealed to us. And Dehradun Indian Meat Academy was established as a forerunner of Indianization of the army. And the Indianization of the army was discussed ever since the end of the First World War, I think since 1922-23, that they would Indianize the army. It was slow, but sure. For example, they had established an Indianization committee in 20s, but they were mid-20s, early 20s, I'm not sure. And this Indianization committee used to meet off and on. And there was a blue paperback, small, kind of a record of their meetings and their recommendations. In 1935, I and my elder brother were just got his commission, and it records to reading the Indianization Committee's reports. And the general impression which the British officers gave in their statements was that it's all very well to Indianize the Indian Army, but the Hindu element will dominate from the middle-class Hindu families who were called the Baniyas. Baniya means a business community. And Baniya was a derogatory term for the rich Hindu middle class, that their sons will come and join the army with no inherent qualities of leadership. On the other hand, the Muslim element will come from the landowner classes, and they would have the qualities of leadership in as much as that they were used to running their agricultural estates, large and small, and they were used to commanding their servants and their tenants. With that kind of a quality, they were better suited than the Hindu class of the candidates who would come for the commissions. This they mentioned in the Indian Army, in the Indianization Committee, which I read myself in 1935. And they gave other qualities, like, for example, that a British officer's training background suits him perfectly for leadership. And the examples they gave were a couple, like that when a British officer goes to turn out the guard at night, the British officer on duty for the week or for the day, he would go and turn out the guard at 2:30, 3 o'clock, 1:30, like this, at night. And an Indian officer would go, because the guard had to be turned out after 10 o'clock of the last verse, while the Indian officers have been known to going and turning out the guard at night just after 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 11:30, 12 o'clock maximum. Then they compare, there was a comparison between the British officers and the Indian commissioned officers from Sandhurst. When I and my elder brother read it, my elder brother was just about to go and do his attachment with the Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders. He said, good God. Now he would remember this, and he would go and turn on the guard well after midnight, just to show that he's as good as a British officer. So things like this used to inspire us. And the Indianization Committee's recommendations were that one battalion, well, the result was that the British Indian government, they selected one battalion out of all of the Indian Army groups, like 1st Punjab, 2nd Punjab, 4th Bombing Grenadiers, 8th Punjab, Baluchis, and the Frontier Force, and so on and so forth, the best battalion in the group to be Indianized. For example, my brother, after his attachment with the Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders, went to join the 6th Royal Battalion, 13th Frontier Force Rifles. Very famous battalion. The story went that Colonel Inskip was commanding that battalion at the time the Indianization was announced, that he was alleged to have gone and met Lord Wellington, the Viceroy of India, and begged him not to Indianize his battalion. Because it was a royal battalion, you know, royal battalion insignia is given to a battalion with excellent war record and peacetime record in efficiency. Every group had a royal battalion, mostly. So, Inskip went to Wellington, begged him, and Wellington's answer to him was that, Inskip, if you find Gandhi in my place tomorrow, what are you going to do? So that clinched the matter. 6th Royal Battalion, 13th Frontier Force Rifles, was Indianized. And Indian officers from Sandhurst began to go there. Very fine soldiers. I think the senior most was a Sikh officer from Sandhurst. I forget his name. In fact, he came to attend the anniversary of the Battle of Neuve-Chapelle in France last year. His name was Mohinder Singh. Mohinder Singh. Very good soldier. He was still alive till last year. And other officers followed. I remember the officers in 1936. There was a Gurkha officer. His name was Jial. And there was Mohinder Singh Chopra. And there were Muslim officers. Very good soldiers. Later they proved themselves. Sher Khan, Akbar Khan, Sadiqullah, Patans, and all that. And my elder brother also joined the battalion in 1936. Now, other battalions in the other group were equally good, with terrific record. So the British sincerity to Indianize the army was apparent from the very beginning. There were small little troubles, trouble between the Indian officers and the British officers. Because whatever it was, the British officers were diehard kind of blimp types. And for them to see Indian officers coming and taking their place eventually was a bit this thing. So both the parties used to read every action, however sincere, with suspicion. So there were slight troubles.
Can you give any examples?
Yes, one example which I heard in 1937 or 38 it was, on the frontier. 1st Battalion, 1st Punjab Regiment, which was Field Marshal Sir Claude Auchinleck's battalion. Very famous. And it was Indianized. There were very good soldiers in it. And they were on the frontier in a camp during the fighting in 1937-38. The story which I heard from my elder brother, that there was trouble between the British and Indian officers. And a very minor incident, like the Indian officer went to the mess and played the gramophone, and he played an Indian record with Indian songs in it. It was on a holiday after breakfast, and a cantankerous British officer came to the mess, sat there to read his paper. And he says, stop that bloody row. So this Indian officer, who happened to be a Sikh, took objection and went to him and said, this is my song and I want to listen to it. His answer is alleged to have been, If you like that music, then go back to your bloody village and listen to it there. This riled up the Indian officers, and they went on a minor little, you know, mutiny in the battalion. It was regrettable, so much so that every regular officer felt it should not have taken place, the Indian officers. And they regretted the fact, but some of the Indian officers were secretly pleased about it. The net result was that I think, if I'm not wrong, which I heard, that this field officer was a major who made those remarks, was finally removed from the battalion. So, incidents like this. Some used to complain about eating English food in the mess, because to the Indian officers, their palates were not used to the bland English food of those days, of late 20s and early 30s and late 30s. So these kind of small ones, but nothing serious, except that a mutiny had taken place in Malaya. I want to mention this because it could be a forerunner to my story later of the Indian National Army, which was created by Japanese after the surrender in Singapore. This incident took place in a battalion called 4th Battalion, 19 Hyderabad Regiment. This battalion had moved as a part of the Indian Brigade, I forget the number of it, in 1939, before the fightings, the war started. They went from India to Singapore as a part of the Indian Brigade, which had in it 5th, 2nd Punjab Regiment, Indian Army, Indian Ice Battalion, and there were 93rd Argyle and Sutherland Highlanders, I remember these, and Seaforth Highlanders and Golden Highlanders and things like that. The Indian Battalion, this 419 Hyderabad Regiment, which was amusingly called the Hyderboodles in the normal parlance of the British officers in the Indian Army. So they had a platoon commander, an Indian officer called Zahiruddin. He was a brilliant officer, graduated from Indian Military Academy. I think his commission was about 1939, regular officer. He had picked up a friendship with a German national, a girl, blonde, beautiful girl. This story I heard from the officers of the 419 Hyderabad Regiment in 1940, when I arrived there with my battalion and 8th Indian Brigade. This officer was ticked off for having a liaison with his German national, whose name was in the blacklist. Because all German nationals and French nationals and Italian were put on a blacklist. And every officer was given it, and I remember the list. Even some names I remember to this day of the foreigners operating in Singapore. Some are in ordinary jobs, like a barman in the Orchard Road Cafe and things like that. But there were names that were given in the blacklist. This officer reacted very badly to it. At first he denied. He said no. Because the civil intelligence had reported that another officer from the battalion called Captain Jilani, he was a Pathan officer, a very good friend of mine, that he was having a friendship with this German national. When the Jilani denied it and they discovered it wasn't Jilani, Zahiruddin was named later. Zahiruddin gave this in the court of inquiry as a mistake by the civil intelligence. In the civil intelligence at that time was my second cousin, my father's first cousin, as an inspector in the special branch, was seconded from the frontier police to keep an eye on the Asians, not on the army, but Asians generally. He had told me this story in 1940 when I arrived there. Zahiruddin was told to stop his friendship with this German girl. In the meantime, there was a debate in the brigade headquarters. All the officers of the brigade joined the debate. The The brigadier command of the brigade was then called Brigadier Paris, who later distinguished himself in the campaign against the Japanese. This officer was arguing in the debate against the British rule of India. And he put up a very spirited case. I mean, bringing allegations like that the Indian Army rations were not as good as the BT, British troop rations, and they fought in the First World War. The BT rations included chocolates and milk and jams and things like that, bully beef and biscuits, while the Indian hard rations were gram, chana, gram and brown gur, locally produced sugar from the sugarcane. And on that, they fought the war as good as the British. Anyhow, at the end of the debate, whether it was Brigadier Paris or somebody who was summing up, said, Zahiruddin, you have missed your vocation, you should be a politician. At the end of the debate, he was called by the British senior officers in the battalion, probably, that why did he make those statements? And could he retract all those things? He said, no, he's going to stick to it. So they decided, they were transferring officers from especially Indian Army battalions back to India, because they were, by then war had broken out. It was in the beginning of 1940, I think. To raise new battalions in India. The popular term for it was milking the battalions, to raise new battalions, to get them fit for war as quickly as possible. Zahiruddin's name was on top, and he was transferred to India. His platoon suddenly went on strike next morning. They refused to pick up their arms and go to, you know, to normal parades. So the CO, I forget his name now, but there was an officer called Larry Hill. Yes. He was a major. And he panicked. He panicked, but the CO panicked. And Larry Hill was a company commander of this platoon. So they said, all right, then confine them to their barracks. And they called the Argyle and Sutherland Highlanders to guard them. The whole company took umbrage. And they all grounded their arms and sat in their barracks. They said, get us all guarded. So this created a minor mutiny. The army in those days, at any time, I mean, this can be taken very seriously. So, there were Indian officers, very senior ranks, like Major Timaya, who later was the chief of staff of the Indian Army. He was in that battalion, senior officer. There was an officer who was senior than him. He was a Muslim officer from East India, from Assam, called Major Majid. I think he was commissioned in 1923 from Sandhurst. Then there was another senior captain, he was adjutant then, called Captain Azam, who was still alive, having attained the rank of a lieutenant general in Pakistan. They all got together, and while they regretted the fact, tried to put matters right, they were up and down and trying to their best to get this company to pick up their arms and get to normal work. The crisis was sorted out within about 24 hours or 48 hours, I don't remember now. And Zahiruddin was finally sent to India and cashiered from the army. While the senior officer,